Yeah, I guess your entrepreneurial spirit, you grew up seeing your grandfather on the Chitlin circuit handling his businesses. Correct. So what was that like?
So actually, this true story, right? My my mama has 8 brothers and sisters. She's the youngest girl of them. So my grandfather, who I referenced, he actually died when I was 9 months old. So I never actually physically met him or remembered or was old enough to kind of get game from him. A lot of these stories I've just either heard passed down or, you know, he had such a resume, a track record, I was able to kind of see it. And then, you know, the dude got a street named after him. He got a monument. He got a temple. He's got a statue of. So it's like some of this shit was just like folklore or just handed. The game was handed down. But anyway, yeah, that regardless of knowing him or not, living up to somebody in that, I look at it like this, man. You know, obviously, you know, this dude before integration, you know, it's kind of was motivation. It was like, damn, man, this man is, you know, before integration, before all this stuff, if a black man can do it in the 1940s, then what the hell is my excuse in 2025?
Facts.
So that's kind of how I looked at it from a motivational standpoint, even if though I didn't know him, right? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, stuff like some stuff still exists, but let's be real, like it was a lot harder for somebody at that time.
No, 100%.
Not only from a racial standpoint, but just from a funding standpoint. You know, wasn't no business credit cards in 1940, you know what I'm saying? So a lot of stuff was done just off the muscle. But just the genius of him, the being willing to do it. Like I say, man, somebody got to jump off the porch. Somebody has to be the first person to say, like, fuck it, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, and I think so, anyway,
that was the inspiration.
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of the times, the fact is just seeing somebody that looks like you doing it is just so inspirational. So like you said, besides the money, besides the integration part, him just being someone that looks like you doing it, it's like, man, now the blueprint is there. Whether he wants to help me or not, I'm seeing it be possible.
Exactly.
Like there's this example, I think it was the 4-minute mile, where like nobody for the longest time was able to run a sub 4-minute mile. And as soon as the first
Prefontaine, who did that?
I don't remember what the name was.
Some African dude.
But once he ran under that 4-minute mile, like a bunch of people started doing it.
Correct.
So it's like, it's really just like a mental battle a lot of the times.
Totally. Because you have at least a reference point to say somebody made it through this thing.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. But you grew up in Tampa.
Correct.
Is that correct? What was that like growing up?
Yeah, so Tampa's it's especially right now, ever since we call it the Tom Brady effect, man, it's popping now. Like it's just, you wouldn't even recognize it, some of the developments. But yeah, it's definitely a diverse town. Not as culturally diverse as Miami, but a lot of similarities. It's an immigrant town. You know, the cigar factories, you know, the people come in there. We actually have a big parade called Gasparilla, which is kind of references the Spaniards coming to, you know, conquistadors coming to Tampa. So all that stuff popped off. It's a very, you know, multicultural town, even within the culture. So what I mean is, like, you know, Spanish is just thrown at you. Creole is just thrown at you. You could be Chinese and they just gonna speak Spanish. You know, like they don't, it's one of them type places, like, you know what it is, right? And so that is what I grew up with. But yeah, I mean, it was a lot of roots there, and because of my family, especially on my mom's side, like it just was a lot of connections, just people, even from a young age, I just felt kind of like welcomed and like a home team type vibe. But yeah, I moved away when I was 14 because I went to boarding school in Virginia.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's kind of was, I haven't lived in Tampa in a minute, but I still, my roots are still there. I still got a lot of family there, and it's a great city, and it's nice to see now most people that are not from that place, they feel, oh, just Miami. They don't know other places, but it's nice to see places like Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, these other places getting some shine and getting some light, and people saying like, hey, you know, it's more to Florida than just the beach or just whatever. So.
No, 100%. Yeah. Before we go into the boarding school, because I do want to touch on that. I think I told the story, remember, on the pod where I went to Miami and went to an Indian restaurant.
Yeah.
They spoke Spanish to me.
Yeah.
So it's like the culture is there, like the Cuban influence, the Caribbean influence is there. And we'll get into your Cuban restaurant here in Vegas later down the episode. But yeah, it's a very unique part of Miami where that culture has kind of been ingrained into the state, if that 100%. Makes sense.
No, it definitely, man. I mean, even like Chinese Jamaicans.
Yeah.
People don't realize, Sean Paul, like, it's Chinese. I went to college with his cousin. It was like, man, even like, you know, you live in it and you still get shocked with the different cultures and just with like crossbreeding. I hate to use that reference, but in a lot of ways, that's pretty much what it is. Yeah, so definitely.
Yeah, but you started playing sports.
Correct.
You go to boarding school.
Correct.
And you're introduced to, you go from this, you know, Florida, living in Florida, being influenced by the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Now you're in Virginia, I believe.
Correct, yeah. So I was in a...
It's a culture shock.
100%. So, like, let's backtrack a little bit. I kind of had a sports family. Not so much my granddad, but his sons, right? I had a couple uncles that played in the NFL. You know, obviously, just naturally genetic, our size. Just a lot of sports figures in our family and in the Tampa community. People like Gary Sheffield, Derek Bell, all those people are from Tampa. So we grew up in that environment. But long story short, this was a boarding school. It wasn't military or anything, but it was a prep school. And so, you know, I kind of was, you know, I grew up without a father. I kind of, you know, you sometimes you like, you know what you need, but sometimes you don't know how to get it. And so this boarding school in a lot of ways was a blessing because, you know, allowed me to kind of first time get away from home at a young age, mm-hmm. Get around men, not only my age, but obviously positive men who were a little older. But it definitely was a culture shock, not only from a geographical standpoint, but just a financial standpoint. You know, boarding school ain't cheap. You know, so I wasn't one of those kids who was a legacy or wealthy enough to pay that tuition. So to having the shock of coming from Florida to Northern Virginia is where we were, where it's located, about an hour away from Charlottesville, about an hour and a half away from D.C. And so you kind of had that, and you had people from all over the world. So you were in Virginia, far from Florida. You know, my roommate when I first got there was from Africa. Then my next one was from Hong Kong. So even within there, you had multicultures, and you had such a wealth gap. You had either people like me who was on scholarship, or you had people who, you know, they just paying $65,000 a year for their kid to go there. So just totally different. And they, you know, everybody kind of treat each other the same, but it was just a lot of different shocks was my point. But it made me adjust and, quite frankly, prepared me for the real world, because that's how the real world is, right?
Yeah.
You're going to deal with wealth gaps. You're going to deal with different ethnicities. You're going to deal with people from different geographical locations. And as a business person, you got to learn how to adapt, because your customer base may be just that diverse.
100%.
And so that's what I learned at a young age. And because of finances, you know, one, like my mama could come up there and visit me every week. So you had to learn how to do a lot of things off the muscle and just on your own. You know, so pretty much you're grown up at 14, you know. So there's a lot of things that people learn later in adulthood. I was kind of forced to learn early, but it kind of helped me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think moving away from home, it basically gave you a college experience when you were 14, correct, especially playing sports, correct, as well, right? So correct, when you do transition to playing college football, mm-hmm, and, you know, you're practicing so many hours a week, correct, where I've seen you mention on other episodes, you know, your degree was in football. Correct. Like you live, breathe, and eat football. That's right, what you're there for.
Yeah, so from an educational standpoint, you, like I've said before, my boarding school was way harder than what I learned in college. Now, the cool part about my boarding school is we played what's called Virginia Prep League. And a lot of these people, now it's more common, you know, kids getting held back. We used to call it postgraduate. So, like, instead of somebody going to a JUCO, they would actually go to a prep. Our school didn't allow, but we played schools that did. Played schools like Fork Union, Virginia Military, Hargrave, these different places where, you know, people are really supposed to be playing Division I college, but instead of going to JUCO, they'll go to a prep school for an extra year. Give you some names like Plaxico Burris did it, Eddie George. And there's a bunch of people off the rip, but that was on the football side. On the basketball side, you know, I mean, in high school, I saw everybody. You know, Carmelo Anthony, Stephen Blake, Roy Hibbert, because all of those people were in the same league.
Yeah.
So anyway, the competition was there. And obviously, sometimes, just like a college schedule, we might have a game in New Jersey. Like I played Charlie Villanueva. He was at Blair Academy.
Oh, nice.
Luell Deng. You know, you might have a game on Tuesday in New Jersey. And you got a game on Friday in North Carolina. So you had a college kind of schedule and college competition. But when you got to college, the real difference was the speed. Just the speed, and then now, okay, you know, it is 90 hours a week. You know, there is no – I mean, you know, obviously you have an academic requirement, but just the workload from an athletic standpoint was just so overwhelming. And you're playing against grown men. You know, you might be a freshman, but you got somebody, you know, 23 years old who really should have got drafted last year, but he's just going to do one more year just so he can increase his draft stock. So that was different. And then there's the conditioning. The conditioning and just the level of the work behind it. You know, you lift weights, but you're not really scientifically programmed to lift weights in high school.
Right.
You
right.
get on that D1 level. They put you on a meal prep. They checking your body fat. They almost doing like a scientific analysis to make you what they want to make you. And that can be difficult for a lot of people who haven't had that type of basically background. You know, right. Some people just playing off talent or playing off size. But when you get on that D1 level, you know,
everybody's talented.
All my offensive linemen were 6'5", 6'6". Yeah. Everybody can bench, you know, 225, 30 times, right? So now it's not you can't just out-muscle your competition. You got to really out-think them and out-play them.
Yeah, it's a big jump.
Oh, my God.
Big jump in skill. But pretty early on in your college career, you figured out how to network.
Correct.
And you were very good at making connections. I'm correct. Sure that a lot of that came from first growing up in a very diverse town, you know, as a kid,
correct,
but then going to prep school.
Correct.
So now you're in college. You're like, okay, this is new. It is a higher speed. The game is different. But the outside of the game, I'm used to it. I'm
correct.
Good at it. So what were the tools that you really use in order to be able to be a good networker
Okay, while so let's talk take it from the top. So before we talk about being a good networker, I just like, you got to realize, like, a lot of stuff happened to me as a kid. So like a typical kid needs to be enticed. So the, this is a gift and a curse, and I've learned to kind of level it out in business entrepreneurship. But I always love money. So, and as a young kid, I just conceptualized money. And so when the money didn't make sense, then I went back to the money. And what I mean is, like, University of Florida, so I played offensive line. Nobody who I played with got drafted except for a guy named Max Starks. Mm. So I'm looking at this like, all right, I'm doing my little ghetto math. All right, it's 15 of us in here. I ain't getting that much playing time. The starters ain't even getting drafted. And only one motherfucker going to the league. And he ain't go first round.
Yeah.
So I'm already checked out.
Because
my Chinese homeboy got a bigger house than Warren Sapp.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? My other homeboy live in Monaco on the French Riviera. And they don't know nothing about blocking a linebacker or picking up a blitz.
We need to do a podcast in Monaco.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes.
So I'm already checked out. And that's bad because I really didn't push to the level I could have. So you always go back to woulda, coulda, shoulda. Man, damn, maybe if I would've ran faster, maybe if I would've studied more, right? But just the money didn't make sense. And so that's why, that's kind of what made me want to network, right? Because I saw people who, everybody ain't going to the league. And a lot of people who I saw who really had real paper, they don't know nothing about 3rd-and-1 or 3rd-and-11 or how to read a zone defense, right? And so I'm like, all right, man, if they can do it, if he can do it over here, that kind of opened up my eyes that it was more than one way to get money. And then, quite frankly, the people at the University of Florida weren't getting, at least my crew, the linemen, weren't getting drafted. So it's like, even if I was All-American, All-SEC, on draft day, I'm sitting here waiting on a call. And I just, as a business person, I couldn't do that. So it made me check out early. So from a sports standpoint, it was bad. From a business standpoint, it was great.
But that takes a lot of self-awareness because you grew up playing the game.
Correct.
And a lot of us, we grew up playing sports. It's like, you love it. And these are our superheroes.
Correct.
We want nothing else in life except to be
Correct.
On a screen, playing a Super Bowl, playing the NBA Finals. And it takes a lot of self-awareness to be like, you know what it is? It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I got to pivot and go to something else. And a lot of people realize that way too late.
But to add on, though, like if you look at the average length of an NFL career, it's 3 years, 4 years.
Come on.
And like, think about if you were to retire at what, 25?
Yeah.
Something like that? And you got to plan the rest of your life from 25 to 60.
Come on.
What the fuck are you going to do?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? 100%. So obviously you saw it beforehand, like, hold on. That nigga way colder than me and he ain't get drafted?
Come on.
Fuck that.
100%.
You know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah. So like, how am I going to get on the French Riviera?
100%. And so it all goes back to that exposure.
Mm-hmm.
But if I hadn't seen, if my granddaddy was a business person, if my best friend's there, if I wouldn't have seen these type of people, and it literally was like, we joke around, but like, obviously Warren Sapp played for the Bucks, and my homeboy, they live in the same neighborhood. So it literally was like apples to apples. Literally, like, it's not like something I read, like your crib is literally twice as big as Sapp. Like, I know that sound.
Right. It's like,
so
the,
it's like, you just like, it's a true, it's a
it's
real
like the comparison. Chris Rock joke,
right?
Like, Chris Rock, he said this joke in a stand-up.
I'm talking about the dentist?
Exactly. Yeah, you know the joke. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Well, I'll explain it for people who haven't seen
the joke.
It's like, Chris Rock, it was neighbors with like Jay-Z, Mary J. Blige, I think somebody else. And then, like, the person next to all those people is a fucking dentist.
And
all the day, he didn't have to be the best person in his field, like Jay-Z and Chris Rock, so on and so forth. He just had to be a dentist.
I'll give you one better.
Uh-huh.
I went when I was in Miami. They got the boat tours. You go around the Biscayne Bay and stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So they're pouring out houses. They got LeBron's house when he was in on the Heat.
Yeah.
Shaq's house. All these famous actors, A-list actors, like people that have been in Hollywood forever.
Yeah.
The biggest house was the dude that invented Viagra. But there goes to show you, it's like, when you put emphasis on the medical field, something that everybody's going to use. Like, we do see the sports stars and the movie stars and the music stars.
Yeah.
But it's like the biggest house was that guy.
Yeah.
So it's like, you really makes you think. Like, goes
because Viagra
the same
isn't
example.
The only.
It's not the
know,
only
know,
thing,
drug,
but it's
right.
like, yeah.
But it makes you think.
Yeah,
and then think. I think like our cultures and minorities and just people, young people, they need to see that. The more they see that, then it really becomes like, okay, now I really get what you're saying.
Exactly.
Because it's more than one way to get there,
yeah.
right? And nothing against the basketball, the football, the entertainers.
Yeah.
We love all that stuff, but that's kind of what forced my hand to be like, all right, this is not working. Let me go ahead and reinvent myself now. And then, hey, a lot of these people who kind of go through these midlife crises or these life-changing moments later, I kind of learned that at 21 years old versus having to learn it at 31 or 25 or, now I really am in the real world and what do I do? So I was kind of, I don't want to say, you know, like practicing, but I was almost like in college where I could make an easy pivot and it wasn't so catastrophic versus somebody who, you know, some of my homeboys went first round, had 20-something, $30 million, blew the money. You know, they've never had anything other than this. And, and quite frankly, they've lived up to that lifestyle where they don't want to go get a regular job.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Because they've had real paper. So that was just kind of what forced my hand to make me want to network. And I think that's just key to, for people to understand. Networking is great, but what is your fire? What is your why as to why you feel this is important to be in those rooms? And then once you get in the room, how you going to maximize it?
Exactly. Yeah. Perfect. So you learn the skills. You're self-aware enough to realize, like, I got to find a different way to make it. And you pivot to business. You obviously, your first business, I believe, is a chicken restaurant.
Correct.
We'll get into it. But it wasn't supposed to work, realistically.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to work. Mm-hmm. And for everybody that lives in Vegas, you know, if you've ever been to Meadows Mall, I grew up right by there. So I used to hang out at Meadows Mall all the time. Mm-hmm. Saw the spot all the time. Same. Man. It's a Vegas staple, man. Chicken now.
Correct.
Actually, you were one of the owners of Chicken
Now. I was the co-founder of it.
So
here we go. So how Chicken Now happened, that same dude who I told you had a bigger house in SAP, basically he was, you know, essentially, I grew up without a dad, right? So I basically tell people, like, I kind of made my daddy. I take some of your daddy, and some of his daddy, and I make my little Zach daddy, and you don't even know I'm stealing some games from your daddy. I'm just putting it in a pot, like a daddy gumbo. And so this dude was like, you know, I just picked up stuff from him. He didn't even realize. I mean, I'm pretty sure he thought he was a father figure, but he had no idea how much I was just soaking up. And so long story short, you know, I knew football wasn't working out, and he reached out to me, said, look, you know, I know your grandfather, your uncles, and people have been in soul food restaurants, fried chicken restaurants. And I looked at him like he's crazy. I'm like, man, I hope this dude ain't think we're going to put oxtails in the food court. You know what I'm saying? Like, this shit ain't going to work. And I'm collard green. Like, what is he talking about?
Yeah.
He's like, no, we're not going to do that. I just want to take the fried chicken recipe and put it with a tender, put it with something fast casual, something that people can eat on the go. But I want the same sauce. I want the same batter. I said, okay, cool. He's like, I also want you to go check out a place at this time, Raising Cane's. He said, I want you to do a little field trip. And I go to Baton Rouge. It was, at that time, Raising Cane's was in Mall of Louisiana. Mm. And he's like, I just want you to see. He's like, the only thing I want you to see is I've been in the game 40 years, and I ain't never seen nobody go head-to-head with Chick-fil-A, not to mention beat Chick-fil-A in any mall food court in the world. He's like, but for some reason, this Raising Cane's concept in Mall of Louisiana is doing more bigger numbers than Chick-fil-A, right next to Chick-fil-A. Because when you create a concept, you know, as much as people are buying the food, they're buying the brand. Right, Starbucks, you know, it's the cup. It's the, you know what I'm saying?
Mermaid.
Correct, you already know. So I went there, checked it out, saw the concept. And he's like, cool, now you see it, you see what I'm talking about. Literally, I was in Mall Louisiana, I was counting customers all day. And so I was like, all right, cool, now I see what he's talking about. And it's like, okay, how can we enhance it? So then we go back to the lab, back to Tampa, and we had like a little test kitchen. We go back to, okay, we know we want our chicken to taste different. How can we make this whole concept different? And so we started doing like homemade, like we'd have macaroni and cheese. We had, you know, we had the homemade coleslaw. We sold Kool-Aid. I mean, y'all obviously went to Meadows and y'all tried the food. And so it was more of a diverse menu than what Raising Cane's had, but that's what we created. Proof of concept was in a mall called Prime Outlets in Orlando. Huge Puerto Rican population, great mall, you know, heavy traffic, outlet mall. Other good tenants there, and quite frankly, in Orlando, we got a tourist market, kind of like Vegas. People going on vacation, going to see Disney, Mickey and Minnie, they're going to have money. And so, to your point, it wasn't supposed to make it, because how my OG was looking at it was, all right, he viewed the mall food court like Monopoly. I'm trying to own as many houses as I can on the block. So I already own the Chinese, the Japanese, the Thai, the ice cream. I already own all these five concepts, and there's seven concepts in the food court. So if I don't put Zach's chicken thing, you know, McDonald's going to come in here. So I'm going to lose $2 million to McDonald's. Do I want to lose only $500,000 to myself, or do I want to lose $2 million if Chick-fil-A does come in here? And quite frankly, they have the branding. So he kind of used me or used us as a gamble or a pawn to see, hey, if I put Zach in here, how will he do? If Chick-fil-A would have did two, what will Zach do? And even if he fails, at least I'm not losing the money at Chick-fil-A. So it was like he was hedging his bet. So what we go in there, though, but what he didn't expect us to do was numbers. So the first one in Orlando, we did about $1.7 million. And literally it was like, all right, damn. Now not only did he not lose, but now he kicking my ass on. He kicking Chinese ass. He kicking the Japanese ass with a lower food cost and, quite frankly, an easier thing to cook. I'm just frying chicken, French fries. Like, I don't have to cook a low menu.
You don't need that wok.
Exactly. It's a whole different level, the labor. And so now he's like, all right, cool. But where we went wrong is, and it's just, you know, you learn. We went wrong a couple ways. Number one, we didn't own the real estate. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm pretty sure y'all have seen that movie, The Founder, McDonald's. We ain't selling hamburgers, we selling real estate. Yeah. So that's the first place we went wrong. The second place is because we got happy. It wasn't just him, we got happy. Who wouldn't be happy about $1.7 million? And when you're a young entrepreneur, you're like, fuck it. You know, your ego kicks in. You think you're invincible, and we grew too fast. In 1 year, I opened up about 20-something stores from 2008 to 2009-ish. And these stores weren't all in Orlando. So now here goes the consistency out the window. Here goes, you make it look easy because you open up 21 stores in 1 year. So now everybody think it's easy. Mm. You know, you know, keep in mind, I'm 23 opening up stores. It's like, yeah, this little black kid, dude, this man, he's just fresh out of college. He's frying chicken, doing all this. This got to be easy. And so just like In-N-Out, they only selling hamburgers, but it's a lot of ways to fuck up that hamburger. Oh, and yes. So people don't understand like the consistency of the product and the consistency of the service. You're not just buying the product, you're buying the brand consistency behind it. So that's where we went wrong. But we were able to scale it to 56 locations nationwide, including Puerto Rico, Dubai, I mean, all over New York. You can't, I mean, the list goes on and on. But that's where we went wrong, and also being in the mall or having a business that relies on another business. So I tell young entrepreneurs that, man, create your own lane. As much as you can own everything within the business, own it. Like, yeah, we're doing well, but technically I'm renting an apartment. I'm in the food court renting an apartment from the mall.
Yeah.
If somebody shoot at the mall, and we had it happen in Seattle, south of the mall, gang shooting in the food court. $2 million store goes to shit. Who want to go to the mall and get shot?
Exactly.
Chicken ain't that good. You know what I'm saying? So it's all these different components that's got nothing to do with you, but you're a victim of the circumstances, just like you in an apartment. You don't own your own house.
Exactly. I do have one question though, because there's a lot of questions for food entrepreneurs, like restaurateurs, and you get like the advice two ways I've seen. A lot of people say the faster you scale, the more locations you have, it does make it easier to brand. It does make it easier for you to be recognizable. But like you said, if you don't scale the right way, you know, a lot of these things happen, right? You're scaling, but you're putting them in a mall food court where it's very foot traffic heavy.
Correct.
So if you were to get a do-over, would you still open up that many stores under different circumstances, or would you keep the same circumstances and just maybe open up fewer stores at a slower rate?
All right, so I'm gonna answer mine, but I'm also gonna answer for somebody listening. The first thing you got to do before you do anything, you got to decide, do you want to be mom and pop, or are you really trying to create a brand? A lot of people want to be in business just to replace a job, right? Which is nothing wrong with that. You basically want to be your own boss, but technically you work in a 9-to-5. So the first question before we get started is mom and pop, or are you really trying to run this thing up? So me, I'm going to answer for me. I'm trying to run this thing up. And what I would do first is I would hedge my bet completely. So I still would own the real estate, but at the same time, I also would create the real estate in the city. So let's just take In-N-Out, for example. Shit took them 30 years before they even went to San Diego.
Yeah.
They went Baldwin Park, and they didn't even go to San Diego. We're not even talking about Texas, New York, forget New Mexico. Yeah. They didn't even drive 45 minutes up the road. And so that's the compoundedness that I would want to do. I would want to own the block, and also say, like, look, all right, let's pick a market where I don't have to go to New Jersey tomorrow to put a store. I can be right here in Vegas. I can be right in L.A., Phoenix, wherever, and it's scalable, and now I'm able to build it. I mean, even Canes. Canes got to Vegas in 96 or whatever they got in Vegas. I mean, in the early 2000s, and it's taking some time for them to get to the level that they're at now. Mm-hmm. But they realize, like, look, I'm going to put 10 years on this thing. It's going to be a little bit of a slow roll, but I'm changing culture. I'm getting people adjusted to my product. I'm getting people bought into my brand. And more importantly, I'm putting my flag in the ground and letting people know I ain't going nowhere. And I can do that all in one market. But that's how I would do it. I would identify a market, own the block, hedge my bet, and look at this as a 10-year plan out and work backwards. Really get sticky in the city and really infiltrate the right way.
That makes a lot of sense. And I feel like that's very good advice for people that are in the food business.
Correct.
Because it's a different business model to other types of businesses.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the only thing, what I'm basically telling you is, expect not to make no money for 10 years. How many people can really do that? Not to say you're going to, you know, be evicted or whatever. Not to say it's going to be always hard times. But to really, like, reap the fruits of your labor, don't expect, like, oh, we're going to open up this thing and get rich.
Yeah, yeah.
All that money, and that's me talking to my younger self, all of that needs to be thrown back into the business because you're looking at it 10 years out.
Exactly.
But in
our
culture, we're not trained to look at 10 days out.
It's difficult, yeah.
So yeah, we want the money now.
Correct. So it's hard, but that's what I would tell a young entrepreneur. And it's tough because, yeah, I hate to use this analogy, but strippers, drug dealers, and you get paid cash every day. As long as I fry this chicken tomorrow, as long as I stripper, as long as I shake my ass tomorrow, you know, I'm going to make X amount. All I got to do is go back to the trap. And that's hard for business people to realize if you're making 3, 4, 5, 6 bands a day. You didn't have to wait 2 weeks to get your paycheck. All I got to do is drop these fries and I got $3 more grand a night. And that's hard for our culture if you don't understand the concept of money. You don't really have $3 grand tonight, even though you made $3 grand.
Exactly.
You made it on paper.
Correct. But if that paper in your pocket, you can't tell me nothing.
Yeah, I can see it.
You can't tell me nothing. Exactly. And all I got to do is open up tomorrow and I got $3,500 tomorrow,
right.
Saturday.
Exactly.
So that's hard for us to see, and that's hard for a lot of young entrepreneurs and restaurant people to get.
Exactly.
And so that you basically create your own trap for yourself.
100%.
Yeah.
So during the introduction, I accidentally called you a co-owner.
Correct.
You're actually a co-founder.
Yeah.
And you do have a very good analogy and explanation to the difference between a CEO, a co-founder, and a co-owner.
Correct.
So could you go ahead and share that with
us? Yeah. So like you've heard me say, but man, co-founder is crazy. Co-founder is, you know, is David versus Goliath. It's somebody who's going to have to break through. You know, like, let's just talk about, let's reverse engineer an investor. You know, like an investor is somebody, you might have a stock. That don't mean you got a Tesla stock, don't mean you work at Tesla or whatever. You just invested in that company. There's nothing wrong with that. Then you have co-owners. Co-owners are people like, you know, maybe they're partners. Maybe they're people that, you know, Series A, B funding that help you scale. They are part in the company. Doesn't mean they don't care, but they didn't create it. They just kind of came along the way. And a lot of times you need people along the way to help scale the brand. But co-founder is almost like that parent that's going to birth this child, and your goal is to get this thing completely off the ground by any means necessary. And that just takes a very unique individual, somebody who is not scared of shit, somebody who's kind of been through things or just understands adversity. And it's always creating, right? And it's always strategy and figuring out ways. And that's what a true co-founder is going to do. And to a certain extent, it's not all just business. It's somebody being like, damn, you know, Zach or whoever gonna really put this shit on his back, and he gonna stand on it, and he don't give a damn if, you know, he in the fucking ICU bed. He gonna find a way to make this thing pull through. And that's the level of person that has to lead the pack. Is you really, like they say, that fearless leader? That's the type of person you're looking for, because if you don't, everybody else will fall. Fuck, I'm just an investor. All right, it's too much. It sounds too crazy, Zach. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, well, I'm just a co-owner. You know, I co-own a lot of other shit. I'm not this is not my baby.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
This ain't my main track.
Correct.
Yeah,
I can easily check out. And so that co-founder person is somebody who, like I said, man, and a lot of times, bro, I'll be honest with you, man, some of the shit I go through, I don't wish on nobody. But at the end of the day, like, you know, you can't ask for a blessing. And then when you get it, you know, talk about, well, this ain't what I prayed for. So that's the reality of it, man. But that co-founder person is a special individual. And if you really sit back and think, some of your mentors or who you look up to as co-founders, they were that person. This is not just to pat me on the back, forget me. Like, when people that like Apple, they look at Steve Jobs. There was something unique there. There was something delusional there. There was something, right? Think of any companies that you admire. Whoever co-founded that, you know, like, Christian Dior, he ain't do that shit till he was 41. Like, you look at all these different places, like, something is a little loony tuning upstairs.
Even this podcast. Correct. When I told people we're doing a podcast, niggas was like, you? I'm like, yeah. And
yeah,
now look.
Yeah, 100%. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, 100%. And you have to, because if you don't believe, who else will?
Exactly.
And so that's co-founder level. But yeah, it's different, different levels across the board. And like I say, to each his own. Everybody has to create their own path, but that's the type of companies that you're looking to either invest or co-own. That's the type of person you wanted to spearhead. Or group of people who, so I co-founded this with my buddy Angelo. So same type of swag, same type of mindset, but that's what you need.
And yeah. I just had a quick question.
Yes, sir.
As well. Like, with all these different levels of people that you meet, co-founder, you know, investor, whatnot, like, as a young person, when you were starting your business, obviously you had your OG help you with the restaurant, but like, how did you grow to learn, like, okay, this dude's a go-getter. You ain't on shit. You just trying to rewash some trap money. Like, how did you figure out who is who?
Okay, so heartbreak. Heartbreak, because what I do is I see the good in people. And I'm so, like, you look at this wall behind me, probably $1 billion in NFL contracts.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm good at scouting.
Yeah.
I'm good at picking talent. Some people are talented, but some people are good at picking talent. Like, I told people from day one, true story, I know I picked Max fresh out of rehab, giving him hats. I knew they was going to give Max 100 million. I just said 100, they gave him 98. When I first met Purdy, I called him, I said, let me tell y'all something. It's a stone cold killer, and they about to make an example out of Purdy in a great way.
Yeah.
And all he got to do is just keep Purdying, and he about to break the bank. I wish somebody would have recorded me say that. This is, you know, Purdy 3-4 games. Yeah. Oh, man, it's a couple good games. Yeah. I'm like, all right, bro, trust me, I seen 50 Cent in person. I seen some cold killers in person. You can just tell somebody on that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So the point I'm trying to make is, process of elimination, but also heartbreak, because I'm good at scouting people, and sometimes I'll pick shit in people that they don't even see in themselves. Mm. Right? Like I called you the other day and said, hey, man, on the run. Let's do on the run. Yeah. Have y'all thought about going places? You could have came over here and said, well, Zach, you know, we just calling this shit on the run. We ain't moving. And a great idea, but, you know, thank you and God bless you. I you know, I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Like that, it is what it is. You have to be prepared for that when you're scouting stuff. So some of it is heartbreak because you see stuff in people that they don't see in themselves. And then some of it they do see, but they're not willing to put the work in.
Yeah.
That part. But I think it's process of elimination. Now, as I get a little bit more fine-tuned, I don't want to sound bougie or whatever, but you got to be self-motivated. You got to be off the couch. The old Zach, I would have tried, man, come on, get off the couch, wake up, hear your shoes, hear your socks, brush your teeth. I would have tried to really raise a motherfucker. Nowadays, I got to see something, some pep in your step already, because I can teach you everything, but I can't teach you heart. I can't teach you hustle. I can teach you
can't teach dog.
Not at all. I can't do it. You either got it or you don't. And especially from a hustler, because a lot of people who I would partner with now are kind of on that co-founder level. Right on that level, like who would I pick for an investor? You know, shit. Once I create a great brand, you ready to invest?
Yeah,
shit. I seen Tom Brady and had Zach. Where can I cut my check? Like they almost dying to give you your money.
Yeah.
On investor level, co-owner level, they're honest. Hey Zach, I own 20 other businesses. I think this is a great thing. I don't mind co-owning or co-investing, but you know, I own whatever 20 ice cream shops. I'm not gonna be here every day.
Yeah.
A co-owner is a little bit more honest about what he can do, but that co-founder level. I gotta see some pep in your step, man. And I gotta see, quite frankly, something that I don't even have. So why would I need two ghetto marketers?
Yeah.
I don't need two people to send Tom Brady the hat. I need you to like design the hat so I can send it to Tom. Yeah. I need you to do something else. This is like a team.
Yeah.
We don't need 5 point guards. Somebody gotta go post up. You know, somebody gotta play defense. And so that's how I try to build my team, and quite frankly, with people that are smarter and richer than me. That helped the heartbreak.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be in rooms where I know every damn thing. Somebody teach me something. So anyway, that's who I look for. That's how I scout them out. How did I learn? The hard way and heartbreak. Absolutely. And that heartbreak came from a lot of close people.
Absolutely.
No, 100%. I think, yeah, the heartbreak is a very big motivating factor. And like you said, when you see something in somebody that they don't see in themselves, I feel like that's when it breaks your heart even more.
Correct.
Because it's like, bro, I loved you so much that I seen, like, I know what you're capable of.
Correct.
But you just don't see it in you, so you're not going to get up off the couch and come get it with me.
Not at all.
So, but a lot of that times, that stuff comes from our culture. And you speak a lot about that, like how you were never taught to care about yourself, to love yourself. It's just about what can you produce?
Correct.
How much money can you generate?
Correct.
And the way different people treat you when it's payday. 100%. You know, people look at you different when it's like they know you just got paid, or they see your business and they was like, yeah, you got your little business going on. But when they see you making that real money, like, oh, I always believed in you, bro.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like 100%. That's very big in our culture. So
correct.
How was it for you dealing with that?
It's tough. It's tough. You know, what I do now, man, I pretty much create like a wall, and I don't want to say I give people a pass. That like, this just the person we talk about who I made that comment about on the show was mama. You know, my own mama treat me different on payday. Right. And it's one of those things, love mama to death, but that's just our culture. Right. That's our, like we talk about, that's what we're shown. You know, people, you know, the drug dealers, the athletes, whoever pull up in a nice car, whoever got the girls, that's who we're shown to gravitate to, or even love or respect. And so even if you're not doing that same hustle, if you have those same things, then the math equation basically equates to you're going to get the same love. You know, if the drug dealer got a Benz and I got a Benz, you don't care if I got it frying chicken or selling drugs. We both got a Benz. We're going to get the same love or what's the name. If I got on a fly outfit or whatever, it's the same kind of concept. So you kind of learn that it's not really that they want to be that transactional, but that's just how we're trained, because we have so much trauma and pain that a lot of this material stuff is a disguise to kind of camouflage that pain you're going through, right? Like I might have been catching the bus for 20 years, but if I come in a drop top Benz, you don't remember the bus.
Exactly.
Right? And so that's where I think just understanding that sometimes it's not that they're trying to hurt you. You're just dealing with hurt people that don't know how to kind of digest or learn how to communicate what they've gone through, and they're not trying to be so transactional, but that's how they were trained. So I've almost had to recondition my mind, like, look, it's not really they got an issue with me, but this is just so much trauma that they haven't dealt with that I'm just catching the back end of it. And then the other part is, like I tell you, creating almost like a wall, like everybody ain't gonna have the same access. Now I say, my mama treat me different on payday, but you know, I ain't letting everybody treat me like
right,
mama.
Right, right,
right. So, okay, we love you to death. We're going to give mama a pass. God bless mama. But I can't give out 100 passes now, because a lot of y'all ain't done what mama done did. You know what I'm saying? A lot of y'all ain't made these sacrifices. So you hate to You know, it's almost like the club line. You know, at one point, all right, we had capacity, and ain't nobody else getting in this motherfucker. And it is what it is. And that's not giving mama a pass, but that's also letting me know, like, you know, I can't let everybody walk over me. Now, you know, what we do talk about is when the success comes and they not asking for nothing, but the hate comes. You know, I've lost a lot of friends, man, with business. I've lost a lot of homies. I've lost a lot of, you know, and they were honest. They knew I ain't doing the work. I ain't showing up, but I still want to get the same VIP treatment like I came here every day and help you sell a hat or helped you fry chicken. Mm-hmm. You know, my homeboys used to say, we got a company.
Who the fuck is we?
100%. Yeah. 100%. When I was working 14 hours a day in the chicken restaurant with, you know, flour on my shoes, it wasn't we. You know, and so that's the thing. And, you know, it's just tough. But they do that because they're proud. You know, if I was mopping floors at somebody else's restaurant, they wouldn't say we.
Exactly.
So, you know, they're proud, but it comes off as, you know, affiliation. And so you realize as you get older, man, you don't need numbers to be valid. You need quality. I used to go to club with 100 people. You know, I probably won't even go to the club. And if I do go, a damn shame with 100 motherfuckers. So it's strength and quality, not numbers.
And how difficult was it to make those adjustments? Because, again, going back to our culture, we're taught loyalty. Mm-hmm. Like, loyalty is very big.
To go back to the hood and look
exactly. Out. And yeah. It's like, that's correct. Very big on us, like, sticking to the people we came up with. And if you don't, it's like, you fake,
Hollywood. Correct.
You think you're too good. Now, yeah.
All right, so I got a couple of ways I learned. And because I'm so loyal, I almost had to learn the hard way. Or I had to learn the compounded way. So the first way I learned was this. I think just simple math. You know, the money just wasn't long enough to keep providing or keep doing that. So I had to make some budget cuts. And when I made them budget cuts, that's when I found out people's true heart. You ain't never going to find out somebody till you tell them no. Till you tell a motherfucker no, you ain't never going to find out their true heart. So life kind of forced my hand in some financial situations where I had to make some adjustments. But how I felt was, shit, if you really my dog or you really love me or you really into me or you whatever, then you're going to be able to roll with it. Because if it was vice versa, I would roll with the punches. I would understand the budget cut wasn't a Zach cut. It just needed to be done. So when I had to do that, I found out a lot of people. The main thing that forced my hand is in 2021, I was around February 2021, I pretty much found out I had diabetes. And I was dealing with some gastric issues, man. I was like, damn, what the hell's going on? Couldn't really shake it. Long story short, my ex-wife at the time, you know, my mom, I was living in my house in Mexicali, and I just was like, wasn't feeling well. So they rushed me to the hospital, and pretty much I found out immediately. My blood sugar was 823. I was about to go into diabetic coma. Long story short, I was in ICU 7 days. I'm fine now. My blood sugar's controlled. I'm pretty much damn near about to beat diabetes. But the point is, when you're in that hospital bed, and you're looking up at the ceiling and you don't know you're going to end up being okay. And you don't really, you've never dealt with this before. And you, when you've done so many things for other people, that's like a wake up call. Like, damn, that phone quiet. Damn, you know, I thought so-and-so would at least checked on me. I don't even, ain't like I asked you to buy my insulin. Shit, just call me. And then fast forward, when it compounded on a bigger level, because even if I do something, I'm still looking for a mentor. I'm still looking for somebody more successful to help me. So I remember when I went to go visit Trent Williams, at his house in Houston when I met him the first time. And obviously, you know, he beat brain cancer, sarcoma. And, you know, he didn't go into detail or put nobody on blast, but he was just telling me situations of like, you know, man, that phone got quiet. You know, he got hit in his paper way longer than mine.
Yeah.
And he done stuff for way more homeboys or family members or whatever. And you can just tell when that phone got a little quiet. Mm-hmm. And no hard feelings. It is what it is. You know, I ain't paying nobody to kiss my ass, but it's just one of those things you just kind of felt life force my hand. And it also told me, look, if I don't get out this hospital bed, can't nobody pay these fucking bills but me. So I got to put this monkey on my back and really, like, man up. But at the same time, after I get out this hospital bed and turn into Superman, you know, the free lunches is over. You know, exactly. It is what it is, because I've come back, beat hell twice. And now, you know, it hardens you. One of my favorite movies, Get Rich or Die Trying, you know, obviously 50 Cent, when his jaw's wide shut, his girlfriend in the movie, he's like, man, my voice sound different. And she's like, it sound better. It's got some pain in it. And that's kind of like how I view life. Like it was a favor for me.
Yeah.
Because even though I had to make budget cuts, even though my heart was broken, even though that phone was quiet, I learned a lot of great lessons at a low cost about some people that would have cost me a lot more on the back end.
Exactly.
So that was how I learned it. Like, I'm a totally different person, but going back to that Get Rich or Die Trying, like it's better. It's got some pain in it now. So now you really feel it.
Yeah.
You kind of had to get heartbroken in order for you to really get it.
Yeah.
If you didn't learn it that way, you wouldn't have really learned it.
Right.
So anyway, Hopefully that answers your question.
No.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I will say, man, you know, like, let shit play out. I used to try to be petty or try to get back, but just let shit play out. Just let shit play out. Just, your heart is in the right place. Just let it play out. Just keep working, keep grinding. You know, if Tom Brady put on my hat or Brock, whoever, like, just, I'm blessed, right? So instead of trying to get back and all this, the get back is going to happen indirectly, exactly. You know, so just let it play out. But that used to be my main MO. I try to kill you twice. You know, like, I want you to see this shit. I'm going to send you a picture. Like, but I'm not on that no more, because that takes the energy away from doing stuff positive.
Yeah, yeah.
But trust me, they watch it, they see it, and they know they're not a part of it, which is, they're going to have to pay their own price, or they're going to have to deal with their own hurt. But that's what motivates me.
Yeah. What's that saying? I don't get even, I get ahead.
Correct.
No, it's very tempting to be that way, especially like when you're like, man, I helped you, bro.
Correct.
Like, but you're right. When you do things the right way, it always ends up working out 100%. For you. Because even if you go through a setback like you did,
right,
you lose all these people, you are heartbroken, and you're like, damn, I done invested so much money into all these people that y'all ain't going to be around no more.
Not at
but
all.
Like you said, now I know. So now when I go forward and I'm scaling, I'm building, I'm going levels y'all didn't even think I was going to reach.
Come on.
Y'all not coming with me.
100%. So, right. And they know that. They know damn well not even ask, because they ain't been a part of the thing, but they see it, man. And the difference, you know, I do different businesses, right? And I tell people all the time, you come to my restaurant, I cook you some food, you might enjoy the food, you go home. If you don't post or you don't do a review, nobody know you came to my restaurant. And with the fashion side, and because of the viability of what we have with the internet, and quite frankly, football and sports in general, it's going to be in your face.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, my ex-wife might go to a bar and they eating chicken wings. You know, he goes Shanahan in an interview. So, like, I'm not trying to even be in your face, but I'm in your face, right? And that's not me even trying, but that's just the viability of fashion and, quite frankly, the internet and sports versus a restaurant. You know, you came made a Cuban sandwich, you know, that ain't really nobody. You know what I'm saying? Sandwich was good, Zach, but don't nobody know you went there but you.
Exactly.
You know, or whoever watched your story. It's not on ESPN or Sandwich or something like that. You get me? So, yeah, that's what I've had to be conscientious of as I grow.
Let's talk about that a little bit. You have the food industry, the food businesses.
Yeah.
You're very successful doing that, but eventually you pivoted into a hat company.
Correct.
Which, you know, it's business at the end of the day, but the business model is different.
Correct.
So how was it for you adjusting?
Good. So I always tell people this, man. One of my favorite quotes with Jay-Z is like, I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman.
We said that same quote.
Right. And so that's one. And then the other quote I do is, it's kind of like my own business hustler trauma. It's almost like I constantly want to show people I'm not a one-trick pony.
Mm.
So it's almost like if you do it once, they call it luck. You hit rock bottom and do it twice, you're a real hustler.
Yes, sir.
Can't keep being luck. So I constantly use that model as I scale. So let's talk about, been my MO from day one. Like, I'm big on mindset. Before we talk about, you know, the hat, the sandwich, the chicken, you got to have the right mindset. Otherwise, you've already mentally put yourself in one as a one-trick pony. So that's one. So now we got the right mindset. So we go into rooms looking for opportunities. We go into rooms looking how to maximize the room, expand the room, and quite frankly, the people in the room. So I had my restaurant at Las Vegas Outlet South. It was a problem store. Long story short, caught my manager stealing. Pretty much like Friday, he got fired on his day off.
Yeah.
Gave him a day off. You know, told him enjoy his family.
Yeah.
You know, some told me to go check the safe. The safe missing $1,000. And once again, heartbroken, because I just would have gave him $1,000 out of my pocket if he really needed it.
Yeah.
Why you got to rob me? You know, we done been in some real shit. You could just ask me for the stack.
Yeah.
I'd have gave you a stack. But now, you stole the stack, and now I caught you. Now I feel some type of way. It ain't even about the stack. Now I'm hot, so I got to fire your ass. So I'm the CEO of the company. Fire your ass on your day off, but now I got to run this damn restaurant. So I'm the CEO, and now I'm damn near the manager. I'm doing your job, too. But I learned it. I turned it into basically like a test kitchen store. So I was like, you know, fuck it. We got 30 stores. I'm going to turn this shit into a test kitchen store. If motherfuckers want hot chicken today, if they want buffalo wrap tomorrow, I'm gonna start coming up with menu items and test them in the wild.
Mm.
Okay, man, Brandon coming today. Let's go ahead and do a goddamn buffalo chicken quesadilla. You know, whatever. You know, my Pam coming tomorrow. Let's go ahead and get Pam a little mesquite chicken salad and get immediate feedback. And then once the person hit, all right, cool. Let me just send an email blast. Now all 30 stores got the buffalo quesadilla. Now all 30 stores got the wrap. And so I use it as a real life test market. Well, because of that, I'm very unassuming. I don't mind, you know, taking out the trash, washing dishes, whatever's needed. And so customers were honest with me. They never thought I was a CEO or the owner or the co-founder or none of that. Just like, man, where's my sandwich at?
Yeah.
You know, he order up, you know, hurry, right? And so they were raw with the feedback, man. Kool-Aid ain't sweet today. Who made the Kool-Aid?
Yeah.
Oh, it's too sweet. Oh, damn, man. Who watered this shit down? So I'm getting feedback. And so now I ended up meeting a buddy of mine who was a customer, then became friend and helped me co-found Residence in Angelo. He was working at the time as a district manager in one of the stores at the mall. And basically, he come every day. And people don't realize people in the mall food court, they keep the lights on. Even if it's just buying a French fry. You buy a French fry every day for 10 years, you done bought my Escalade. You know, it's $3 every day, $3 you coming back. And imagine you coming back with three of your friends that's buying three French fries. Yeah. So it's like it's almost like winning home field advantage. And so he would come and, you know, obviously we're doing fried chicken. He's like, Zach, man, I love this shit, but I can't eat this shit every day. Like, you got some healthy options? I'm like, well, we got grilled chicken. He's like, nah, I want a plate. Like, I want some broccoli. I want this. So, you know, I'm a hustler. If he wanted sushi, I'd have made sushi if he had the money. So my homeboy on the Chinese spot, I went and got some broccoli and rice, came back. He's like, Zach, how you do this shit? I said, don't worry about this. You know, $8.99. Just give you spit. I got it. You go.
Just eat it.
Yeah. Eat it. So we became friends, and he was from Vegas, and I'm from Tampa, Florida. So let's fast track. Call it 10 years later, fast track. We in L.A. at a Laker game, and he's younger than me and kind of always looked up to me for mentorship advice or just entrepreneurship advice. A lot of times you have friends that, you know, they're looking to say, damn, like we go back to that co-founder type role. Damn, how you doing it, Brandon? Like, I always wanted to start a podcast, but I never had the balls to do it. Mm-hmm. Or how did I get started or something? Right? How did you walk me through the steps? And so we had a Laker game about, you know, 15 drinks deep. And he's like, man, I got an idea. And, you know, I'm like, here we go again. 15 Hennessy, now you got an idea. And so basically I'm like, man, sober up tomorrow. Come to me with this bright ass idea. Let me watch it. That time Kobe was playing. Let's finish Kobe and then tomorrow, whatever. So anyway, he hit me up, unlike most people. Like, I'm sober now. I got an idea. I want to start selling. You know, hats. I have some different hats I want to show you. I was like, cool, come to me with a prototype. And he came to me with actual physical prototype. So he came to me with the prototype, and it's an LA hat at the time. And I'm just wearing it around, not even trying to sell it. You know, people trying to buy this hat off my head. So I was like, all right, we got something now, because I'm not even trying to sell it. People know me as a chicken man. They don't know me as a hat man. So if somebody trying to buy a hat off my head as the chicken man, imagine if I really promoted this or sold it. So a lot of times people will come to me, it's that co-founder mentality, they'll come to me on ideas how to scale. Like, okay, Zach, I got a dope hat, but that is just a hat. How do we turn this into a company? Same thing with like my candy company, Worms. I mean, I make some good ass gummy worms, but how do we turn this into a whole brand? And so I'm like, all right, now we start whiteboarding ideas. Okay, cool, what do we got? You got an LA hat, cool. What is LA? LA is a city, okay? What's another word for city? Resident, residency. You know, people are residents. A house is a residence. You know, DJs have a residency, doctors and nurses, right? Just all this different wordplay. Because back to the restaurant business, I'm trying to sell you this chicken sandwich five ways. Catering, dine-in, to-go, mobile delivery, pickup, and you know what I'm saying? So I got to scale the hat five, seven different ways, right? If you box yourself in, you only getting one stream of revenue.
Exactly.
And so that's how we started the brand, and that's how he came to me. But to answer your question, a problem store led to door number one led to door number two, which led to door number three. But if you don't have the mindset and you just like, damn, I'm frying chicken and mopping the floors, and you feel like you're stuck in here, mentally, physically, you may be in that situation then, but mentally, if you're not looking for the opportunities, you're never going to be able to find the next blessing. And quite frankly, people can see it in you. They see that, you know, something is weighing on you, or you've already kind of put up your own walls. So anyway, that's kind of how the brand started, and that's how I was able to go from doing the restaurant side to the fashion side.
Yeah, that's something that I feel like we've talked about that on the podcast, mm-hmm. and I've given the same advice to a lot of people, where no matter what your job is, no matter what you're doing, figure out a way to learn some skills doing that. Like, build some connections, learn some skills, like do some on the side. Like, if you're just mopping the floor at this office, like, what conversations are you listening into? Look at how they're doing business. Look at, you know, the way they're talking to people, mm-hmm. the way they're scaling their business. Like, you're not just mopping floors at the end of the day. It's like, to go back to our example, it's like, to tell people how we even linked up. Noah.
Yeah, that's a crazy story. Like, we
talked about it before the pod, but go ahead.
Oh, okay, I got to explain. So, yeah. I know Pam, but I don't know her that well, to be honest. I know her, one of her best friends. Me and her best friend went to high school.
Yeah.
So I'm a photographer outside of podcasting. And her best friend asked me to shoot her wedding, obviously, since, you know, I've been shooting for years at that point. So I shoot her wedding. We meet at the wedding, you know, whatever, life goes on. Obviously, I'm on the pod. She's working with residency. She sends a hat to the studio. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not there that day.
We grab that hat. Yeah. He sees the hat. We're like, yo, this is a pretty cool hat. We put it in the back on the back of the studio. We were thinking about already interviewing a UNLV athlete, so we reached out to a few people. Chief Borders, shout out to Chief, man. He's like, yeah, let's do it. We set it up. He's on a pod. Mm-hmm. Y'all somehow knew each other from the University of Florida from years ago.
Correct.
Somehow linked. So
I went to UF and I did a visit there and went out there, Chief.
So like y'all knew each other. Y'all end up linking up. He tells you he did the podcast. You check out the podcast. And I'm like, I mean, I can imagine looking at the podcast and be like, is that my head in the back? So it's like all these different things. It's like everything is done with purpose and everything happens for a reason. And it's the exact same example. It's like that guy is coming to the food court every day eating chicken. You could have just been like, yep, here's your order, bro. Correct. Have a nice day. But 100%. It's like, nah, how, like you said, how am I getting, bro? It's all about the mindset.
Yeah. And then what we also saying indirectly, nobody big time each other.
Exactly.
So like he didn't big time me because he didn't think I was just mopping floors. I didn't big time him because really I'm the CEO of the company. I could have just said, hey, man, somebody take this man order.
Yeah.
Same thing with y'all, right? You was like, you know, everybody's down to earth. It's just a good, I don't know, it's just a good vibe that you feel across the board. But I never big time nobody, man. And that's the king because you never know. That doesn't mean you're going to be there forever, right? That person might be mopping the floors, but they might be the CEO. And I learned that the hard way through my uncle's restaurant, busting tables. But you learn a lot from people, how they treat their server, or who they treat somebody who they feel is beneath them. Mm-hmm. Or even that person ain't even beneath them, but in their mind, that's what they think. You learn a lot, man. And quite frankly, that's how I've been blessed.
It's
mindset. But if you don't have that mindset, you're not even going to get to the Pam, the wedding.
Right.
You wouldn't even been at the wedding if your attitude was fucked up.
Right, exactly. Like, you that's just crazy.
Real.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't even they paid for their business. Because
she could have found a million for Tiger Woods.
Right, but they also paying for a vibe. Let's be real.
Yeah.
You know, I know you had a couple of drinks, and you know what I'm saying? You was getting them to do pictures that they normally wouldn't have felt comfortable with if you was a born-ass photographer.
Yeah. I was drinking, I ain't going to lie.
100%, right? Yeah. Chief, like when Chief pulled, so I saw Chief in Florida, I had some bags. He hey, man, what's going on? I see this brand. Like, what you doing? He reached out because he saw what I was doing. And then I wasn't an asshole. Okay, cool. Hey, what's up, Chief? Nice to meet you. I think at that time he was a freshman. It wasn't like he was Brandon Spikes or T-Boy. Right. I could have been like, man, who was Chief? You know what I'm saying? So it's just all this energy that you can just tell. And that's the best way to grow.
No, 100%. Man, that's kind of, it just made me think, bro. Because I genuinely believe nothing, like everything happens for a reason. Sure. So like all of that, even him back then as a freshman, was a pawn in this grand game for us to be here today.
All day long. Yeah.
And like you say, you not big time in, what's his name?
Angelo.
Yep. You not big time Angelo, him not big time you. That was a pawn in us being here today.
Correct.
You picking up photography was a pawn in us being here today. Like, I don't know, it's a crazy story.
We didn't mean going to the high school.
Yeah, bro. But it's crazy. But so you start residency, you building out the brand, you scaling the brand. Like, what are the things that you're doing differently to not just be a hat brand or to not just stay in one lane? Like, how are you taking your business? Right.
So first of all, like, we go back to this, man. So I'm big on like manifestation. I'm big on, I don't believe the same thing. I don't believe coincidence. I don't believe in luck. I believe in, you know, being blessed and being great. You know, I think definitely is a divine power, right? But I mean, ain't no coincidence with this stuff, right? So long story short, the first thing I want to do to tell everybody, like, I basically tell everybody do a 5-year plan and work backwards. So immediately before we start anything, we already going into it with goal setting. We already going into it with me and Angela. When we started from day one, we treated shit like a Fortune 500 company, right? It wasn't like, oh, and we just selling a couple hats. Nah, like we own these people's ass from day one. And the structure is set up as a Fortune 500 company. Even though we may not have been that on day one, that was the tone. Right, from titles to labels to processes to documents to professionalism from day one, right? So that's one. If you don't treat yourself like a boss or professional, why would anybody else? Okay. Now we go into, you know, creating something that's scalable within the scale. So like we said, doctors got a residency, DJs got a residency, you know, everybody got out to go take their ass home. Everybody is from a city. You already opening a business that allows you to have multiple layers. You're not going into this as just a one-trick pony. You're creating something that allows you to scale. Now, you might not be at scale level on day one, but the opportunity is there, like the residency analogy. Then you got every city. Now, how many cities can we do? So there's so many different ways to kind of maneuver, right? Doesn't mean you're going to do it on day one, but you do have the opportunity. Now, when you do that, you really need to be open-minded along the way. So, for example, I know football, you know, pretty much everybody's favorite player. I've gotten a hat. But now I'm like, all right. I go back to the thing, like, let me show these people I'm a real hustler. I joke around on our little marketing chats and all my reps, like, shit, you know, Big Zach don't ice skate. I got a San Jose Sharks on a deal. You know, my big ass can't fit in a Formula One car. I done Formula One hat. You know, I got a Mexican soccer team. Atlas getting ready to do a deal with me. You know, like, you know, I ain't from Jalisco. You know, I don't play soccer. Yeah. It's like, at what point is it like, damn, this dude is really a hustler. He's got something. It ain't just, you know, Trent was my homie or, you know, my cousin knew Debo or, you know, I mean, and we love those relationships and we don't want to lose that.
But it's got to be bigger than
100%.
That.
And it's got to be that and showing people the breadth of the brand. Because mm-hmm. think about it, your favorite athlete or celebrity, they wearing Givenchy. They're wearing Balenciaga, right? They don't necessarily know Mike Amiri. Right? They don't know Lorenzo. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things like they're buying into a bigger brand.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember when we got Tom Brady in a hat, Trent was like, damn, Brady wore the hat. So even Trent was looking at Brady, right? Yeah. So it's one of those things like you have to keep, obviously just keep the momentum going and keep the mindset open to what we're trying to accomplish. And we go back to, we created a lifestyle brand. As many football players wear our hats, this is a lifestyle brand. And let's be real. That, you know, they're going to eventually stop playing football one day and they want to be treated like regular people, not only while they're playing, but after they're playing, right? You keep in mind, like I tell people all the time, we look at them like, oh my God, or this and that. They're high paid employees. They might hate their boss one day.
Exactly.
They might, man, this coworker getting on my damn nerves.
Yeah.
It's just like any other job. And so we lose sight of that because of, you know, with the entities that they represent and their stature and who they play for and quite frankly, what they get paid. But it's just like anybody else, man. You know, on Monday, on Friday, you ready to leave home. You shit, man, I'm so damn tired, ready for the weekend. So it's the same mindset of somebody in there, right? And I think, you know, there are obviously athletes who are just, you know, like, you know, Kobe was like a gym rat. There's people like that. But at the same time, Kobe would have been a gym rat if he played for the Orlando Magic. It wasn't the Lakers that, you know, made him have that mentality. Yeah. That was Mamba mentality. That would have been the same thing on the Charlotte Bobcats or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I tell people, just going into it with something that's scalable, allows you to really create a great body of work. And then now you create challenges along the way that you really say, you know what? Like, hey, you know, like, I don't ice skate. How we got the Sharks? It can't all be luck. At what point is it like, man, this dude really owns something? And so anyway, that's what I require of myself. And that's what I would encourage people to do, right? And y'all do the same thing with the people y'all interview. Exactly. Y'all ain't just interviewing ball players.
Ooh,
y'all interviewing everybody on the run.
No, man, listen.
Everybody on the run, literally.
I don't know if it's this for your DMs, but my DMs, people be like, people that know me, kind of how you were talking about, like, oh, no, come on, bro. Let me get on the pod. I'm like, nigga, what are we going to talk about, dog?
Correct.
Respect. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful manner, but like the level of research me and him have to do and the work, and we bring our cameras. Like,
yeah, you got
to
sell yourself.
Yeah.
And that should be easy for somebody who, like I tell you, everybody got to have that 30-second elevator pitch.
Yeah.
And if they're really on their shit, I can sell you in 10 seconds why I need to be on here.
Absolutely.
Right? And so it's the same thing. Like, okay, bro, you know what? My bad. I didn't expect you to hit me and think you deserve it. Babe, go ahead. Shoot a shot. What value or what? Hey, I don't know every damn thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So if they can't do that in 10, 15 seconds, then how are we going to
have a conversation?
How
are
we
going to
talk for
an hour?
How are we going to talk for an hour?
Exactly. And I'm sure it happens to you too, where it's like, let me get a hat, or I got this dude, this person, let's do something. Let's do
this idea, bro.
Yeah. It's like,
we're going to sell just ketchup.
Yeah.
Like the Wolf of Wall Street, sell me this pen.
Yeah.
The same type mentality. If you can't do that, then it's just tough for us to be on. It's tough for me to put you on.
Yeah.
You got to put yourself on.
Exactly. But no, I think, yeah, I see a lot of similarities in the way we run the podcast to what you're saying now, like scaling the brand, how you don't put yourself in a box and you have to layer it, layer it, because we do the same thing. Like, we might have, you know, a dietitian on this week, and we got a boxer on next week, and we got an entrepreneur on the week after, someone that does this other thing the next week.
And to add on to that concept, I think regardless of the people we talk to and their different, you know, careers or, you know, endeavors they have, kind of like you were talking about with the chicken sandwich, it's still like, or excuse me, In-N-Out, it's still the same level of quality. I can get an In-N-Out sandwich on the east side, on the north side, Summerlin, whatever. It's the same sandwich.
Correct. Brand consistency.
Exactly.
That's what people are buying.
Yeah.
That's what people are buying. You have to protect your brand.
Yeah.
You have to, man, because it's not other people's job to do that. But once you create infrastructure, people, I tell people like same thing, like in a sexual relationship, you show people how to date you. It's the same thing. Like, you can't go to Walmart with no clothes on talking about you going to shop. Same thing. Like, you can't go to somebody's house for the first time and just put your feet on the count. Like, you show people how to date you, how to court you.
Yeah.
The same thing in business with a brand. If you don't put no respect on your name, why would they?
Nah, that's 100% true. That's 100% true. But what lessons have you learned after entering the hat market, after starting this business, that you then go back and apply to your other businesses?
Oh, man, I call it, I think the biggest one is ghetto marketing. I tell the people, man, that's the biggest one, ghetto marketing. And ghetto marketing is a scouting report. Ghetto marketing is understanding that, and I use ghetto marketing, but it's really genius marketing. It's really guerrilla marketing. I just almost like, it's just the hand to hands, the relationships, and understanding that it's a feeling that people are buying. You're not really buying a hat or a shirt or whatever. You're buying a feeling, either a product quality feeling or a brand feeling that has already been built with nostalgia. So I'll give you two physical examples, right? Why you want a Rolex, why you want a G-Wagon, right? It's like if there's a Brabus G-Wagon over there, they ain't gonna let you test drive that motherfucker. Right?
Yeah.
You know, they might let you sit in the bitch and crank it up, but they're not gonna let you put 10, 15 miles on it just riding around. That's $1 million truck, right? So the mindset is you already sold on that. Like I bought cars and ain't even test drove. Yeah. Why do you want the presidential Rolex? Why do you want these things? It's a great quality product, but the nostalgia of the brand has already been embedded and programmed in your mind. So that's one. And then now you creating an ecosystem where people can't leave. Right. So I use Apple. Apple does it the best. You got your phone, your watch, your iPad, your MacBook. You know, you if your phone break, you're not going to cuss out Steve Jobs. You're not even going to blame Apple. You're just going to say my phone broke. You're not going to go switch to Android right there just because that phone broke. You know what I'm saying? You already stuck.
Yeah.
You stuck by choice. You want to be stuck.
Yeah.
Somebody texts you with them green dots. Man, you be so ready to get out that group chat.
You look at the phone like.
So it's the same. It's the same mentality, yeah. Right? And so that's the feeling that they're selling with a product. And then that's on kind of like the everyday level. And then, you know, the G-Wagon, the Rolly, that's the nostalgia of, man, something, you know, it, like Biggie say, hanging pictures on my wall. You know, like, you know, I already vision all this stuff because that's what I was told was the lifestyle that I knew. Even when I didn't have it, I knew I wanted to have it, you know. So that's what I say is that's what I've learned the best. Ghetto marketing and branding. You got to have a great product. You got to have consistency. You can't sell dog shit. But that's what you really selling is a feeling. I got players, you know, Fred Warner, signed the highest paid linebacker in NFL history, just signed his contract with a hat on. Max Crosby, when he proposed his wife, he had a hat on. When his baby was born, he had a hat on. You know, that's money. That's moments you can't buy. That's marketing you can't buy.
Prices.
You know, because that's the feeling. He felt comfortable in that hat. He felt comfortable in that product. He looked good in it, you know, and... Hey, you know, Zach don't bother me for game tickets and other shit. So it's like, cool. I mean, why not? Why not wear it? Why not rep it? And here we go.
Yeah.
No, I think going back to the Christian Dior example, it's a very good example how a lot of us sometimes are very short-sighted. But you say Christian Dior started when he was like 40.
41, yeah.
But, but how long did it take to be the Dior it is now? Like, correct. He might not have even been alive to see it's become But it's become like a name. Like, correct. Everybody knows Dior.
Correct.
They don't pay for no marketing. They don't pay nobody to wear their stuff. You want to wear it. Correct. You might pay them.
All day long.
Like, I want to be a rep for y'all.
Come on.
But it's like that level, it's very hard to see when you're starting from ground zero. Correct. Because, like I said, like we were going back to the beginning of the episode, we want it right now. As soon as I make that money, I want to go spend it. Like, correct. I want to go buy the Rolex.
All I got to do is sell dope, and that's correct. It. That's it. Correct.
So you, I don't know if you want me to touch on the Jumanji now.
Please, yeah.
Do it.
Okay,
yeah.
So there's a couple things with your... So the first thing is, you obviously doing this for some type of financial reward, right? You obviously, you're in business to make money, right? It's got to make sense. But at the same time, it's got to be bigger than money to keep you in it. So you need money to keep the lights on. You need money to scale. You need money to grow. And there needs to be, like my mentor used to say, you can't measure what you don't manage. So there needs to be some type of analytical stuff to see if you're progressing. But at the end of the day, because of the Jumanji you're going to go through, because all the hell you're going to go through, and I used the Jumanji, that Robin Williams movie back in the day, it's my era, but literally it was like everything, they played this, you know, I don't know if people don't know the movie, but they played this board game, and each time they rolled a dice or something bad happened. At first they rolled it, here go the monkeys, here go the snakes. Then after they beat that, then here go the bees and the floods. And that's basically entrepreneurship. And, you know, you're going to make money along the way, but now you need money to take care of the monkeys. And then after you take care of the monkeys, now here go the lions. And some of this shit happens all in the same day. And sometimes you got the monkeys, lions, the bees, the tornado, earthquake, and you don't even have enough money to weather the storm. And that's when you got to be like, I signed up for this shit more than just the paper. That's what keeps me in. Because if it's just a financial transaction, you're going to check out, just like a job. You know, you wouldn't go 8 months at your job with no check.
Exactly.
You'd be like,
I want to go 8 minutes.
Come on. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. But entrepreneurship, you're going to do 5 years and not make a dollar.
Yeah.
Off the dribble. I'm telling you. Now, you're going to have paper in your hand. Right. It's going to feel like you've got, but I'm talking about real talk. You ain't going to make shit for 5 years, especially if you're trying to scale it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's a quick lick in and out, I don't really call that really entrepreneur. That's a quick lick.
That's a flip.
Correct. Yeah. But I'm talking about something like, nah, I want to build a brand. Nah, I want to have 15 restaurants in Vegas. Now I want to have the best, you know, barstool dude.
Exactly.
You know, he ain't just a first date. You know, look how long it took him. Cost him his marriage. Cost him his life. Like, cost him money, time.
Sold the business, bought it back. Come for on. A dollar,
so
yeah.
It's like, that's what you're signing up for, and that's Jumanji.
Yeah.
That's the different levels that's really gonna test to see if you really bought that shit, and if you really can come up with strategic things to reinvent yourself and kind of figure out the next level of Jumanji.
Now, pivoting back, you got a bunch of restaurants here in Vegas. Uh-huh. Talk to us a little bit about that. Like, what was it like entering the market for restaurants in Vegas compared to what you were doing before? Like, outside of the mall, I
Correct.
Guess.
So, this is the hardest part in the mall, but going from the mall to the street. In the mall, pretty much all we did was rely on foot traffic. Mm. So, if the mall was busy, we were busy. That also kind of gave us an idea of our price point, what we could charge, what we couldn't charge, almost like, you know, what they call, like, what's the per capita income of this area? The malls know that. They these big anchors, Neiman Marcus, Saks, they're not going to pay the type of rent they're paying if the mall is dead. Mm-hmm. So it's almost, I don't want to say a safer bet, but it's almost like back in the day, people were shopping. I remember like going to the food court, you know, we were window shop, you know, it's before internet, anything. You just walk in the mall. Mm-hmm. Now people window shopping on their phone.
Exactly.
So there's no need to walk the mall and be broke and physically broke. I can just be on my phone and window shop, and whenever I get paid, I can just buy it on my phone and probably get it quicker. And if I don't like it, I can return it. So the model is different now. The hardest part going to the street is now you're a destination. So we go back to somebody is getting in their car. Somebody is driving to your location with this gas that's damn near $4 a gallon, right? Then when they get there, they now it's their time. They just wouldn't, you know, in the mall, you can do four things at one time. You actually came to my Cuban spot. You actually parked your car. You got out. You waited in line, whatever. And so that takes a lot of psychology for somebody to do. Walking the mall, I just hit you with Sam. Oh, damn, this bourbon chicken tastes good. Damn, I didn't even know you're cooking. I got you. It's impulse. Somebody hopping in their car, or even if they're on a mobile app, they're making a deliberate choice to choose you, and that's tough. And keep in mind how many restaurants they're going to see before they drive to yours. How many people on that mobile app or Uber Eats before they scroll to yours. So it's just so much competition, but the real competition is the customer's choice, and that's the hardest part. And then at the end of the day, you know, it's you on the street. You on your own. There's nobody to – you can't say the mall's slow because now you got a brick-and-mortar location on your own. We slow. It ain't got nothing to do with the mall. Like, everybody else busy on the street, we slow. So that's hard for a lot of business people to look themselves in the mirror because now you really got to figure out adjustments. So that's the hardest part. But like I said, overall, I'd rather be that destination because now I can kind of create my own magic. And I know a lot of people may not agree with that, but that's me. I'd rather bet on me and bet on what I can do rather than bet on, well, I'm a victim of circumstances because, you know, somebody, you know, God forbid, did something in the mall or the mall shut down or, you know, the mall raised the rent or, you know, it's a lot of these. I just don't like playing the game like that because it's always going to be against you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of the times it's easy to use it as a crutch. Correct. And be like, oh, well, it's their fault. It's not Correct. Us. When in reality, it's like, nah, let's take a look at what we're mm-hmm. doing on the marketing side. What are we doing in terms of like how we're treating our customers? Correct. What incentives are we giving them to come here? And like you said, now you got a bunch of barriers for them to cross totally. In order to get that person in the chair.
Come on.
So specifically talking about that strategy, I guess, like, what are the biggest key takeaways that you have learned that really get people to build a brand? Because I've always said that mm-hmm. it's a very hard to find a replacement like that. I think you talked about it, finding that third place. Yeah. People have their job, yeah. they have their home, but where are we hanging out? And I feel like that's a big thing. Yeah. Like when we were growing up, like you said, a lot of us, it was the mall. We could go out to the mall at the school, walk around,
yeah.
or, you know, a lot of cities, they have that one diner that's famous. That's like, yo, we know that diner. My granddaddy grew up going to that diner. My daddy went to that diner. I go to that diner. Okay. My kids are going to go to that diner. How do you build that?
So, man, okay. So, you're asking a good one, and I still feel it's going to change. And the reason I'm going to say it's going to change now, what I see now, I see a lot of people shopping with eating with their wallet. So let's get to the money first, right? Eggs is, what, $9 a carton? So, you know, that's just eggs, right? That's just food in general. The grocery store has gone up, right? So now people are, before we even talk branding and all the magic tricks, now people are trying to look for what's affordable. Then they doing their backwards math. Okay, it ain't that cheap. So you know what I'm going to do? Instead of coming here once a week, I'm only going to come here once a month. So I'm going to already do my math where the math is the math.
Yeah.
I only going to spend $100 with you, Zach. Do you want 25 every week? or do you want 101 off the rip? So I think people are doing that in their mind, especially if they got families, and especially if they're getting, everybody didn't get a raise. So if, when the eggs went up, everybody's salary didn't go up. So people are doing the math. I see it. I saw it in my Cuban restaurant when our chef did a Cuban pizza. It's $9.99. It's almost like a personal pan pizza. People can share. They go home. They happy. They can eat with their family. You know, why did this Cuban pizza hit? It's obviously a great product, and it went viral from an aesthetic standpoint or with the reels or whatever. But let's be real. When it wasn't the reel that did it, it was, look, this shit is $10. I can get full off this thing. I can take it home. I can eat it for later. Even if I want to eat it by myself, I feel the personalization. And it's $10. I can give chef $40 a month, come here once a week, and I got a great buy. And you see people that, why do people like tacos, right? Why do people like burgers? It's a shareable item.
Right.
So that's one. Now, after we talk to money, I think it is the consistency in the branding, right? It is like, hey, how can I build this ecosystem of people who just psychologically are just bought into my brand? Raising Cane's does a great job of it. You know what it is. In-N-Out does a great job of it. And even when they make price adjustments, you already trapped in an ecosystem. People don't realize that double went up January 1st.
Yeah.
Trust me. If you that Caniac went up.
Oh no. Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Yeah. But you already stuck.
Yeah.
And you already see the value in, hey, you know what? The Caniac went up, but it's still six tenders in this thing. I can still get my old lady three. Right. I can eat three. We split the fries.
Right.
We get rid of the coleslaw. We get the double fries. Skip the toast.
Yeah.
And baby, sip slow on that drink because I want some too. So we still feeding. We feeding two people, right. But we got the Caniac. So you went up $1, Todd Graves, but I split this thing 2-8.
Yeah.
So who really won?
Exactly.
Because I don't mind by giving you $1.
Yeah.
Because now we got two meals. Or if I eat it by myself, hey, you know what? I'm going to eat four, save two for later. You know, people are doing that type of math, and I think that's what brands need to understand. Like I told even off the pod, I'm trying to get a customer for life. I don't even care about right now. I care about 10 years from now, 20 years from now. I care about you telling your whole fucking family this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's the real money. But how many people see that vision? But that's all they're doing. They're trying to create a feeling. And once you feel value, you will pay. You will pay. You will pay. Once you feel appreciated and you feel value, you in there. You stuck.
Yeah, that customer
for
life.
So that's what I would do. So like I say, we go back to what I've always said. Put 10 years on it, whatever you're going to open, and say, look, man, you know, if this thing pop next year, great. But I'm really working a 10-year plan.
Exactly. Because 10 years is going to pass regardless.
100%.
So would you rather be, it's going to be 10 years from now with a business or 10 years from now and you just at the same place because you wanted to spend the money every time it comes in.
Come on.
And like you said, customer for life, you know, they might be giving you $10 a week. But if you can guarantee someone gives you $10 a week for 10 years, how much money is that?
100%.
And you multiply that times, now you're going to bring your girlfriend, you're going to bring your wife, you're going to bring your kids, you're going to bring, you know, your friends, your coworkers. This is like,
Well, you touched on my point, which is what you said is the other way, but the same thing.
Yeah.
You're doing community or communal stuff.
Yes.
So you're not by yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
You came, you know, very few people eat alone. Yeah, I'm not saying people never do, right. But very few people just always alone. Like a lot of stuff that I'm selling is community stuff.
Yeah.
You wearing my hat to a game. You know, you wearing my hat to a club. You're not in the club by yourself. Even if you went alone, somebody, damn, it's a fly's hat. Where you get that at? Somebody going to pull up on you. Same thing with the food. You know, you might pop in for lunch one or two days, but you're not always going to be alone. And so that's the thing, too. If you can create things where it creates community, then that's the real money. It's $10 for that personal pizza, but they brought five people with them, and all of them got drinks. So we still got to $80, chef.
Yeah.
What are we talking about? We still got the $80 off one hit. So it's not just 10, it's really 8. So that's just the math you got to do, but you got to have people that see that vision.
Nah.
Otherwise, it's like speaking another language. They just don't get it, man.
Yeah. 100%. I could definitely see that. Like, just talk to them over there.
Yeah, 100%. You can see it. They already checked out.
Yeah. I mean, so if you were to share one thing that nobody ever told you about success with an entrepreneur watching, someone that wants to start a business, what would that thing be?
Start early. Start early and just go with your move. That's my biggest thing that nobody told me. They told me the other way. They told me through dream killing. They told me through pussyfoot. And they told me through delaying it. They told me through that. And I went right back. I went right back and did what I knew was in my gut feeling to do. That's the biggest thing. And they people don't mean no harm. Could be parent. Could be spouse. Could be mama, daddy, sister, brother, dog. But I knew at 17 I was on this shit. But, you know, being in school, okay. School ain't teach me nothing. I could have been frying chicken at 17. You know, like, you know all of these different things. And the reason why I say that's so important, it's not just the dream killing, but at 17, I ain't got no car payment. At 17, I ain't got no mortgage. At 17, I don't even understand the concept of bills yet. And I'm more inclined to take a real chance and risk when you got an old lady, you got a baby, you got this, you got that. And quite frankly, even if you don't have that, you're accustomed to a certain lifestyle. A lot of people can't make lifestyle cuts. They want, you know, they want that brand new car. They want to go out every night. That's tough too. And so when you get older, you almost, you know, like, you buy your own chains, right? You basically put yourself in these different situations that you become accustomed to or you become obligated to, and you can't say no. And so now it's like, damn, I'm 30. Shit, I can't just sleep on somebody's couch. At 17, I ain't had no rent. I was at mama's house, grandmama's house, auntie's house. Exactly. So I could have done this part at 17. And shit, at 23, we could have been 6 years in the game versus starting at 23, even though I knew I wanted to start at 17, but I listened to my dream killer. And now I got to do from 23, like you said, you're still going to do the same 10 years. So now that 10-year clock starts 10 years later.
Exactly.
And here we are. And any business person will tell you, we can get back money. We can't get back time.
Yeah.
I can made it, lost it again, got it back twice. So, but that time I never get back. And so you pay for your own tuition. That's what we call it. Like School of Hard Knocks, or, you know, like I said, what I would have paid to go to Wharton School of Business, I done paid 15 times already. You know, whatever Harvard Business School costs, lost that shit last month.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying? You already paying your own tuition. You go with your move and go with your move, because somebody was killing my dream. One of my mentors told me, how can somebody tell you how to make somebody making $30,000 a year, how the fuck is that they gonna tell you how to make $30,000 a month? Mm. And he didn't want to say no names. What are you talking about, Mom Dukes?
Yeah.
He didn't want to call out
yeah.
Mama.
Yeah.
You know, that's your mama. So yeah. But who I'm talking about is who really in your ear. How can they advise you? And we love these people, but how can they advise you? They ain't never had no problems. Like, you don't know what you need until you really need it. One of my favorite movies is a movie called Blow, Boston George.
Of course.
Yeah. And his daddy said, you know, George, my money ain't real. People only think it is. And residency taught me money ain't real, because all it takes is the internet to pop. And if the internet pops, you know, let's say you make, when we first popped, we made $168,000 in 8 days in 2021. That was our big pop. And that's a great number to achieve. But if you haven't consistently made $168,000 every 8 days, you don't have proof of sales. So now margins off the chain, product is off the chain. You need stuff last minute. You got to fulfill orders. You know, even your profit margins won't even be the same, because this is not a consistent revenue. So you don't even really know what you need. And right. So that's where we go back to, money ain't real.
Right.
You know, like in my restaurant, I got capacity. I can only fit 300 people at my restaurant in Owen Henderson Eastern, right? But with the internet, you know, you got 300 people on your site right now. You know, all it takes is one little tweet, you know, somebody go viral, something pop. And now the whole different perspective of money is different.
And if I could add on, if I could add on to that, I think for a big takeaway for a lot of entrepreneurs out there that are watching is that, you know, kind of how you're talking about, like, you grossed $168,000. That's gross.
Correct.
Right. But I'm speaking from experience, because I'm an accountant. That's my 9-to-5. Like, motherfucker, there's a whole bunch of other shit on that income statement. Goddamn it. When you get to the bottom of that motherfucker, that's gross. That shit start at the top. That's cute.
Correct.
Then it's expenses.
Correct.
By the time you get to that income number, you're like,
totally.
Where'd that 168?
Shit, where's that 168?
Correct. And then you're still in business.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're closing.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like we can just cancel. Like, oh, we out.
Yeah, all right.
We still gonna fund the next thing. So it's all, to your point, it's the bottom of that statement. And by the way, we need some more money to keep the doors open.
Yeah, I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, they need to, if they aren't already, you know.
Money ain't real.
Exactly.
So like you said, the cute point, it felt great, and I don't want to knock anybody's success or those
great
moments.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's the back end to what did money ain't real.
Yeah,
money ain't real, man.
And the people in the league see the same thing, right?
All
day long. Like, you get a big contract, but it's like taxes gonna take 40% your agent, of that.
Yeah.
Come on. Your agent gonna take that. Insurance, medical, like, you might be investing into a retirement plan. You got all
and,
these different
kind of like how he was talking about at 17, 18, you ain't really got no bills. No, so
correct.
By the time you sign that, you know, you do the dot line, you got the hat.
Come
on. Take a picture of a mama. Mama, I'm gonna buy you a house.
Yeah. 100%.
And then this person takes money. This person takes money. And this is before you even hit the fucking field.
Yeah. Come on.
So now Come on, they gave you the hat. You done shook the old white dude's hand.
Yep.
All right, nigga, hit the link. Come on.
Exactly.
Come on. And then if you don't perform, they're going to talk about your ass crazy on ESPN. And you're like, you know, you catching flights to games and shit. Niggas looking at you crazy. Like, oh, this nigga about to get cut.
Come on. Nigga, and back in the day, a lot of them contracts weren't even guaranteed. Exactly. Especially on the football side.
Yeah.
Now you kind of see a little bit more guaranteed, but back then it wasn't even guaranteed. Oh, so it's like, you know, big ass contract. What, $18 million of this is incentives.
Exactly. Right.
This is if I do this, I get this. Yeah. One of my homeboys, true story, to show you back in the day, named Mike Peterson played for the Jacksonville Jaguars at the time. Long story short, he had this in his contract where if he, let's just say he had 100 tackles, for example, they was going to get $1 million bonus.
Yeah,
but they knew Jaguars weren't making the playoffs. Last game of the season, he walked in there with 90 tackles. First half, he had, let's say, 5. In the second half, he didn't even play.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm not going to let you get this 100 because why would I pay this $1 million bonus and we're not making the playoffs?
Exactly.
So it's like you this people don't realize. It's just like in my restaurant. I'm not going to let you hit overtime unless we need you to hit overtime. You know, why would I just have us giving out overtime? And so people don't realize, like, damn, why Mike P ain't playing? Or damn, why is he all right? Yeah, he all right. But somebody, to your point, that accountant is up in that booth saying, hey, man, take him out.
Yeah.
Take him out. Because otherwise, these 5 tackles going to cost us $1 million.
Yeah.
So anyway, you already know.
Exactly. I got one last
question. Please, brother.
If there's someone on rock bottom right now, they just hit rock bottom, you know, the business owner, it ain't going too well. And you touched on it a little bit earlier in the podcast, right? If you make it once, that's luck. Hit rock bottom, make it again. You're really supposed to be there. What advice would you give that person that's at rock bottom right now?
Okay. I'm smiling because I love how y'all do y'all research. So, I mean, because obviously you saw that thing where I said, you know, rock bottom don't scare me, right? You know, so then that's the scary part, that rock bottom don't scare me. So I'm saying it. I'm going to give you the full game. So the first thing is, from our culture, stop. And I'm talking to myself and my old self. Stop looking for trauma as a badge of honor. So that's the first thing. And the rock bottom don't scare me. But don't keep looking for rock bottom just acting like you hard. So let me just, you know, that's crucial, right? And I think a lot of people, it's like the hood mentality. Like I'm back here. What, you know, it's like, come on, man. Nobody wants to really constantly
be in the hood.
Yeah. Right. You don't want to be in the hood. You don't want to be in the trap. You don't want to hit rock bottom. So I just think that's me. And that's something I've been working on daily. Like, even though I can be Superman and overcome these hurdles, like if we can avoid the hurdle, let's avoid it. But if you own rock bottom, I think you need to have a real good understanding that this is what you signed up for. This is what you prayed for. Don't ask for something and then, like you said, you got the rain to come with the mud. You're going to have to understand what you really are asking of yourself. And then you really have to ask yourself, have you put enough time in it? Has time really expired? And if you came into it, like I told you earlier in the part, if you come to something where you got multiple ways to scale or to maneuver, then you're not really trapped. Let's just say, for example, the hats. Let's say the hats don't sell. Well, we technically a lifestyle brand. We're not a hat company. The hoodie's selling.
Right.
The shirt's selling. The beanie's selling. It's just maybe the snapbacks ain't selling. Or let's say, okay, well, for example, hey, man, you know, the Vegas hats ain't selling. Well, the San Francisco ones are selling. So you got to put yourself in a situation where you can pivot. Like they always say, real entrepreneurs don't panic, they pivot. But you have to allow yourself to pivot. And I think that's huge. And all of these things are basically tools to avoid you from hitting rock bottom completely. And then you have to understand too, like Sean on earlier podcast said, man, rock bottom is not forever, it's a state. It's like, this too shall pass. It's a beginning and there's an end, and understand that after you understand this is what I prayed for, that this may happen, understanding that this is not gonna be forever. It's not a permanent situation. And then now you put a little analytics on it too. After you put a prayer on it, you say, all right, what's the worst that could happen? What's really the worst that could happen? If God forbid, you know, nobody bought hats tomorrow. If God forbid, now you go back to, well, you know, I've been doing this for 20 something years. I am a hustler. I am an entrepreneur. I do know a little something, and I'm not scared of hard work. If I had to go back there and make the Cuban sandwich my damn self, I would do that. I've done that, right? So that's the thing too. Like, you're still betting on yourself. You obviously have companies and have brands, but it's not all the bet is on them. The bet is on you. My granddad used to say it best. You know, it ain't the land, it's the man. So it's like, you still betting on you. So yeah, this didn't work, but this did. And I think sometimes too, when shit doesn't work, it's a lesson, man. A lot of shit I've done has failed, man. A lot of shit, even businesses, ideas, but you still in the game. You only really lose when you quit, man, when you give up. And that starts there. I read something the other day that said, man, you know, brands don't die when you run out of money. Brands die when the co-founder or the owner, whoever, runs out of energy. Mm. Yeah, money is like we say, money ain't real. Because if you gave me $100 million today, right? That's my your financial goal that one that I want to reach, especially for residency. Right? If you gave me $100 million check today, I'm still gonna be in here working. I'm still gonna have the same intangibles. I appreciate the check, and we're gonna, you know, go out to eat, and we're gonna take a nice trip, and you know, we're gonna enjoy the fruits of our labor. But at the same time, you know, I'm still a hustle junkie. I'm still gonna be at the office. I'm still gonna be looking for ways. Now I got the funding to do what I really want to do. You know, so that's how you got to look at it, man. What's the worst that could happen? And even if the best happens, you know, just staying even keel.
Nah, incredible advice. It's
tough, man. Especially if you're on that co-founder level, because people are looking up to you. Exactly. People are looking up to you. I saw it. Customers that bought hats later, I hit them day one. People need to see some consistency with you. That's something that brand, oh man, they ain't support. Have you been consistent enough?
Did you hit them up?
Correct. Mm. And have you been consistent enough for them to support? Because people are not going to be as honest. Like, I had some people, like, we're doing our first Friday event at Bel Air with Pam, right?
Yeah.
People I invited to the first Bel Air, they didn't come to the fifth Bel Air. Let's be real. Maybe they ain't get paid that Friday. Yeah. You never know. Yeah. Not everybody's going to be as candid as us on the show. They're going to be like, shit, man, I just paid rent, man. Fuck Zach and Bel Air. I'm just being real.
Right.
I can't do both, Zach.
Right.
Now, you pop one bottle, but shit, I need you to pop the bottle and the rent.
Yeah.
I ain't got it. I understand it. I've been in that situation before. There's nothing wrong with that. But people are not going to be that transparent as to why they're not supporting. But the consistency of what you're doing, ain't no problem. Whoever, peanut, bobo, whatever, ain't no problem. Really come to the next one. Exactly. Cool, Big Zach. You know what I'm saying? You know, hey, man, I got my bonus. I'm going to be through. I'm bringing my old lady, my mama in town. All right, bet I'll be there. You know, and so you still, like, I'm not going anywhere. And they need to see the consistency of that, too. So that's a lot of it, too, man. You have to allow people time to be consistent. If it's a pop-up shop, it's a pop-up shop. But if it's not a pop-up shop, then you got to put some consistency on what you're presenting. Hey, people might have not seen y'all's first episode. I heard y'all talking about we about to be on your 100th episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We can get you some liquor that day because you can, right?
For sure.
But, you know, I saw episode, what was Chief? Chief was episode. 84,
maybe. I want to say 84, 83.
Cool. Yeah. So I saw Chief on 84.
Yeah.
Okay. Y'all had 83 episodes before Chief.
Mm-hmm.
I saw y'all on 84. Now I can always go back and watch them other 83.
And please do.
And I can always go back and watch 84 onward.
Yeah.
But if y'all stopped at 81, then I don't see Chief at 84. So and now we go back.
Happen.
It's 100%. So that's what that's the thing we're trying to build here. Like, rock bottom is not permanent. Rock bottom might have been episode 79. I don't know. You might have been like, fuck this shit, man. It says 79. I don't know. Rock bottom for me might have been, you know, chicken restaurant number 3. Who knows? Might have been. You know, it took Trent Williams a year and a half before he really put that hat on and, you know, Zach, I got you, and Debo point on the sideline. That didn't happen on day one.
Yeah.
We didn't get Tom Brady the first day, and I think just people need to understand that. It's not overnight, bro. And we live in a microwave generation where people want stuff instant. Man, it don't happen that way, bro. If it does happen that way, I don't even want it because I know it's short-lived.
Exactly.
I know it's a trick.
And it's so, like, it happens too fast. I don't know what to do with it once I got it now. And that's too scary. I'd rather it take time.
Come on.
At least I learned the lessons I need to do to sustain this versus it happening overnight.
Correct.
Something I kind of always tell myself, like, you know, when people get caught up with, like, dope cases and all that shit, I always say to myself, fast money going to get your ass slow time.
Correct.
Because that's, look at BMF and them.
Come on.
This nigga Meech got out of 20 years. I thought it was going to be bottles and drafts in the club. This nigga out like a goofy.
Yep.
I'm not hating. I'm just, you get my point though.
100%.
Right? When it's popping and it's, you know, bottles in the club and it's a look. Hey, Noah, let's come through.
So I did one thing real quick. I want to share this.
Please.
So we did a collaboration with the Dream Program. Dream Program is a program with Metro. Essentially where they target at-risk kids, at-risk youth, people that quite frankly either need leadership guidance or who have, God forbid, gotten off the straight and narrow and need to be kind of realigned. So long story short, I did a program with them, and my mama's younger brother, you know, sold dope and wasn't, you know, the level of Meech, but the same level. So one story, it's a funny story, you know, same thing, braggadocious, typical drug dealer mentality. He pulls up to grandmama's house one Easter, you know, got $2 million in a briefcase. And so literally what I did with the kids at Dream, I basically put on a whiteboard. I said, a lot of people are coming here today. They're going to tell you, don't do this, don't do that. We're not going to talk about nothing moral. We're just going to talk about money because everybody in this room like money. And a lot of times y'all are going to be tempted with money decisions. You know, somebody's going to be asking you to do something illegal because of money. They're not asking, you know, why would you say yes if there was no money involved, right? To your point, fast money, slow time. So I said, this is what we're going to do. I had a picture of me when I was 6 years old. It was the last time I saw Uncle Reggie. I'm 42. So I ain't seen Uncle Reggie in 35, 36 years.
Yeah.
So I said, all right, cool. That's me as a kid. I'm in the white suit, Easter, he in the white suit. Perfect. We put $2 million on the board. And I said, okay, we're going to do some other stuff. Nevada minimum wage is $12. Okay.
Yeah.
Going to write $12 Nevada. with Zach. Uncle Zach paid 20. We're going to put my 20 on the board. I don't pay nobody minimum wage because I don't want people to give me minimum effort. I'm going to pay you, but I can't, you know, I can't give you $1 million an hour, but I want you to feel proud about you working at this place. And quite frankly, I want you to be happy because I want to be happy and I want my customers happy. So Nevada give 20, I give 12. Uncle Reggie got $2 million. Now, Uncle Reggie, at that time, nobody in the room seen $2 million in briefcase. Nobody. Okay, cool. We agree. That's a lot of money. Now, Uncle Reggie been in this motherfucker 36 years, and he'll never get out. So whatever Uncle Reggie making per hour is only going to get worse. You an accountant. Stay with me on this ghetto map. Mm-hmm. So we go through it. 36 years. How many months is that? How many hours in a month? How many minutes in there? Boom, we go through the whole damn thing. So basically, now we figure out, okay, $2 million is a lot, but what did that time really, or what did that risk really cost Uncle Reggie? And how much is Uncle Reggie really making per hour? That's what we're trying to figure out. So you can make a financial decision and not a moral.
Yeah.
I'm not here to be your moral compass. I'm here to be, you want to get some paper? Let's get some paper. So we go through the whole analogy. Kid raised their hand, you know, little smart kid. Uncle Reggie, I think at that time when we calculated, which was 3 months ago, Uncle Reggie was making $5.60 an hour. So y'all tell me if y'all want to sell cocaine. Y'all tell me if y'all want to hit this lick. Y'all tell me if y'all still want to join a gang and rob banks and do all that. Because Uncle Reggie did all of that, and he making $5.60 an hour. And that's just the hourly stuff. That ain't the lawyer. That ain't the bond. That ain't the time. That ain't all the stuff Uncle Reggie got repossessed. That ain't the feds kicking in. That's just giving you the grace. We won't even count that. Let's just count the $2 million that he had and divide it per hour.
And like you said, and so, the longer you're in there, the worse it gets.
Correct, because he got life without parole. He ain't never getting out. $2 an hour. It's a trap question. Exactly. By the time he get done, and I told that to my mama, she was like, because she's like, Zach, why you never got in trouble? I was like, mama, you know, she's like, you did keep a foot in my ass. But I did that math a long time ago because I like money. And I was like, man, it's just, this ain't adding up. And so many of us, and you could just see their eyes. It was like, man, like nobody's ever really, I know they haven't, because it's a trap. It's not designed for you to think financially or strategically, is this the best decision? It's designed for you to think on impulse that's going to cost you your life. You know, one quick bad move is designed to cost you 35 years in prison.
Right. And kind of wrapping up to that mm-hmm. concept you're talking about to relate it, like, I think with the athlete stuff, like, people's dream is, I'm going to make the league.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Nigga, what else? What else you gonna do? Like, correct. You know, I don't got it. Like, a lot of people, they don't plan for like the next 30, 40, 50, 60 years of their life. They're just like, I just gotta do this one thing. I'm straight. I gotta sell dope.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I gotta make the league. I'm a rap. I'm gonna drop an album.
That's it.
That's it, huh? All right, bro, for sure. So nobody, like,
no,
you don't want to make that pivot, but it's like, all right, life gonna make your ass, life 100%. Gonna make you motherfucking pivot,
100%.
And especially in entrepreneurship, like you were saying. I think that's really the biggest lesson for, you know, entrepreneurs or just anyone out there. Like, you got to be able to be quick on your feet,
100%.
Because if not, you're gonna get stuck in that sand,
totally. And thinking long term and working backwards, yeah, having that long term play, because you make short term decisions because you've never been taught to think long term. You've never been taught, to your point, to think, I'm 70 years old, let me work backwards.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's a lot of situations, we don't live till 70.
Yeah.
So why am I retirement planning? I'm about to get shot out here tonight.
Exactly.
Or, you know, everybody I see, don't nobody make it, you know, like one pass supposed to make it past 25. Yeah. Right? That's the rap lyric, Kanye, right? And so that's the mindset. I've never been taught to think long term. So it's just all about what you see, man, and exposure. And that's why I encourage people. That's why just different cultures, different, so many lessons, man. My Chinese homeboy told me, my Jewish homeboy told me. This wasn't really taught in home. Even my granddaddy was a millionaire, but still wasn't able to pass down generational wealth.
Right.
You made it, and then everybody else fucked it up.
Right.
But now we back to, I got to fry the chicken again.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm frying the same chicken your ass fried in 1940. I feel like Eddie Murphy in that life. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've been frying chicken for 70 years. God damn, when is the chicken done? When can I turn into Colonel Sanders?
Yeah.
Like, I'm frying the same tenders, the same way, the same grease. I'm flipping it. I'm doing the same thing you doing. And you ran it up. And now I got to run it back up and pray Zach Jr. or Zach Arena don't fuck it up either.
It's a right, just like, you know what I'm saying? How you're talking about with the Lakers just sold for $10 billion. And everyone's just like, bro, Jerry must be mad than a motherfucker right now if he saw that shit.
Correct.
Because I don't work so motherfucking hard. And, you know, this is my life, you know, my whole life. And that, y'all done sold this shit because y'all fucked it up.
That's one thing, too, with kids, man. The entrepreneurs out there that have families and kids. That's your dream. Mm. That's Mr. Buster's dream. That wasn't Jenny Buster's dream.
Right.
Jenny Buster's dream was $10 billion.
Yeah.
Don't care, you know, somebody cut me a check is my is the kid's dream, the parent's dream. So like I same thing too. Don't create businesses. Oh, residencies for Zach Jr. Zach Jr. might not even like fucking hats. Yeah. He might have dreads and can't wear the hat.
Yeah.
You know, like you, this was your dream.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the same thing that happened to my granddaddy. Like my granddaddy was an entrepreneur, but my uncles weren't trying to do that shit. Their uncles, one of them was a manager for Marvin Gaye, the other one was a bodyguard for James Brown. They played football. They like partied and they ain't want to fry no chicken. That shit sound like hard work.
Yeah, I want to party with Marvin Gaye.
100%. So that's the here we go. I want to look like I'm the boss, but I don't really want to go in here and drop these fries and make this mashed potato. Come on, man, that sound like too much hard work.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's the thing too. You sell kids on something that they ain't signed up for, and they end up hating you for it.
Yeah.
They really do.
Zach.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you, G.
Thank you so much for welcoming us in, man.
For sure, man. 100%. Anything y'all need, just let me know. Truly appreciate what y'all doing in the city. And just keep the momentum going, man. Love what y'all got going across
thank
the board.
Thank you, man.
Nah, man. True that's love, man. Thanks for the free game, bro. Yes, I feel like I hope everybody benefited.
Y'all better take notes this when y'all watching this episode. Yeah, I'm listening. I'm like,
Same, bro.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it 100. Sometimes we'll interview people. I'm like, man, what am I finna eat later? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Hopefully a Cuban sandwich.
Yeah, for sure.
That Cuban pizza.
I'm still selling it.
All right, fellas. Nah, man. But just like you said, bro, like, you done paid what you would have paid at Harvard Business School. So I feel like we just got that summarized.
You got war in school. This is basically
That's what you want. It's digestible for people.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Where you can apply it and use it and you see the analogies and how you can put it into action. Like I said, when I talk to people, it's almost like a seminar. It ain't even about me. It's how do you apply this to what you're trying to do.
Exactly. So hopefully everybody back home was able to benefit from it. If you are an entrepreneur, hopefully you're able to apply some of these principles. If you're not, hopefully there's a little fire under your ass to get off the couch. But how do the people support you? How do they get in contact with you?
Obviously, with Link's Residency with the three in town. We have Fat Sal's, Kubani Dodd, Earth Cafe, Pokey, Total Bean, all the different local spots y'all can pull up. And like I say, really just support me by doing your thing, man. Like I say, start early, follow your dream, and just like really stand on what you believe in. And that'd be the biggest favor to me, to get more entrepreneurs, more people. Because like I say, I don't know every damn thing. I want to learn from people too. Right. And so likewise, that's the most beneficial way I see how we can conduct business.
Absolutely. Likewise. Thank you so
appreciate
much.
Appreciate y'all, man.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Definitely.
I don't know if they can find you on social media.
Y'all can follow me at @2DATK on all y'all favorite social media platforms.
Yes, sir. Go ahead and follow my personal Instagram. It's going to be @1OTRB. Make sure you follow the podcast page. It's going to be ontherun.pod, all social media platforms. YouTube, thank you guys so much for supporting, man. We're killing it. The numbers are going up steadily. So thank you guys so much for the support. We'll be sure to keep bringing some good episodes for y'all. We'll see y'all next week for another episode, man. Peace.
Yes, sir.